Oof.
All right.
Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
I wanted to do a woo across the thing.
A little Doppler effect. It's a spoiler cast today.
Yeah.
A big spoiler cast.
People have been waiting for this one.
I wanted to warn you, spoiler casts, we got more requests for this than anything since, like, I thought we got a lot of requests for spoiler casts from Guardians of the Galaxy, but that was nothing compared to this.
Well, we're working harder nowadays to get out and do the spoiler casts for important events, and this one was definitely worthy.
We had to watch a movie.
It's the only reason I go to movies in theaters now, is that somebody wants a spoiler cast, so here we are.
And we all saw it the right way.
You went to the IMAX 70mm?
Not only did I see it in IMAX 70mm. I sat in the back row.
Middle
of the back row. The theater was practically empty. I saw it yesterday morning at 8:30 in the morning.
So it wasn't 3D, so I was a little bit off to the side, but I was okay with it.
Yeah.
You know, 3D, you don't want to be off to the side.
You know, because you clicked on the link.
Yeah, it says right up there.
Yeah.
Interstellar.
Christopher Nolan's Interstellar with Matthew McConaughey and a whole bunch of, like, people who aren't listed on the poster or in any of the trailers.
A movie that originally was supposed to be directed by Steven Spielberg, adaptation of a book, and he fell off the project because it was at Paramount, and then he moved all his projects to DreamWorks. Obviously, DreamWorks SKG.
So it's been in the works for 20 years?
Not exactly that long. And then Chris Nolan came aboard. Kip Thorne, I believe, the astrophysicist, PhD, he has a great book just about black holes. I remember reading this in middle school. He was the one who pitched the idea, executive producer on it. And they brought in Chris Nolan.
Which idea did he pitch, though? Did he pitch the relativistic time? Spoilers from this point forward,
we are not holding anything
back.
I'm not actually
sure what the original story was and how much Chris Nolan brought to it, but I think he brought the science and Chris Nolan brought the family aspect.
Okay.
And he wanted to make it a letter to his daughter, as it becomes very clear.
It's a dad movie.
Yes, absolutely. Co-written by his brother.
Who is co-writer for all Batman films and Inception.
Yes, yeah. And very peculiar. This is the first Chris Nolan movie in a long time without his cinematographer, Wally Pfister, who did Transcendence.
His own movie, yeah.
And I think they should get back together and put each other back in line.
I thought this film was beautiful to look at. I really thought it was gorgeous. Specifically the space stuff.
It was a movie, obviously, homage to 2001.
Oh, it wasn't an homage to 2001. It was a, let's make 2001 intelligible to a mass market. That's my complaint about it.
I disagree.
You don't think so?
I actually object to comparing it to 2001 in such a direct fashion.
So directly, yes.
No, here's the thing, though. Look, there are shots. There's the docking shot in space. He plays on our expectation that the robot's going to turn out to be evil through the entire film.
And designs it like a monolith.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I see what you're saying. There's a lot of that. The black hole tesseract tunnel at the end is
Dave going through the...
Is tesseract an actual term of art within science, or is it just something that we now agree to put in every movie about time travel?
Tesseract is a math term. It's a four-dimensional representation of a five-dimensional construct or something. I don't know. It's when you think about math, that it's above my ability.
When you think about like folding cubes.
It was in Fez.
You know, 2Ds, you can fold, if you make a cross in 2D shape, that folds into a cube. So when you fold the 3D version into a 4D, that's how you get into the four dimensions. That's a tesseract.
Yeah.
Okay.
And also it's Thor's thing.
There are ways in which the film is incredibly sophisticated in learning from past filmmakers like Kubrick. And also, there's shades of feeling a little like Gravity, but in exploiting the silence of space, that really, really lovely.
Shot like a documentary in some ways.
In some ways,
IMAX cameras mounted to the side of trucks and virtual spaceships.
Mm-hmm.
The movie is 2 hours and 50 minutes long, his longest movie by far, and I thought it felt real fast.
They
jump right into it.
Yeah,
I did not feel like it went
fast. Oh, you went a little long?
I felt like it went on a little long. Let me just state outright, I did not love this movie. I felt like it had giant flaws in the plot, and I was very sad about that.
Will?
I quite liked the movie. despite the giant flaws in the plot. And I think I'm going to go ahead and tell you, I love Matt Damon. I think Matt Damon is fucking awesome.
I love
Matt. He did not need to be in that movie at all.
He was perfect.
That whole segment.
So Matt Damon's in it, and so is Casey Affleck, and so is Topher Grace.
Who's Casey Affleck?
He's
Casey
the son. He's the grown-up son. Oh, he's the best actor.
Really? He's the beard.
Oh, he's the great. Best actor.
Oh, he was wonderful.
Movie.
Yeah.
No, I didn't know that was Casey
These
Affleck.
People are all great. Yeah, I know. So,
Topher Grace getting hit in the face is. I'm down with that. I will watch him get hit in the face
Topher
anytime.
Topher Grace is awesome, and I'll go Topher. To Matt for Topher.
No, I love him.
Okay.
He took a face hit real well. That's all
I was supremely disappointed by the movie.
I was too.
So instead of outright hating it, I was just disappointed. That's the difference.
Okay, I didn't outright hate it, but Norm told me before I saw it, he said, there's going to be a point in this movie where you go, ah, crap.
Hold on, was it the Anne Hathaway's bit?
Well, no, the thing was, is I was having trouble figuring out which one, because in the last 40 minutes, there's like five of those to me.
Yeah,
like,
what I meant
really?
Was when they unzipped Dr. Mann, and it was Matt Damon, and I think he was perfect for that. The way he portrayed the role of the best of us being also the worst of us.
I get the point.
It was completely unnecessary.
But I don't think it was
I saw it coming from the moment he started talking about like, the fulfillment of human destiny. I'm like, you're about to kill someone.
And I love that he monologues because he's been in isolation for 10 years. Psychology.
I get what you're saying, and that puts a layer on it, which gives me more respect for it because I see the point of why he would be doing that. But at that point, I was not along for the ride. Sorry, but
it was so heavy-handed, though, and it was like the moment he's like, "Don't fix the robot. Whatever you do, don't touch the memory bank." You're like, "Well, that name is going to go on a murdering spree." Yeah. The point that it broke was when Anne Hathaway makes the pitch to go to her boyfriend's planet. And it's like, I don't have science behind trying to save the whole human race. I just like love.
Love
and you're just like, fuck right off.
Well, so let's just point out that the plot holes start in the beginning of why is Earth dead and there's no more technology because of the blight.
They didn't fill in the gaps in there. My presumption is that is a Paleo Bellucci style genotype crops, gene edited crops gone awry, where some blight picks up and like it spreads from crop to crop because we shared genes across all the crops and made bad choices.
And I know we're not going through this linearly. We're sort of going through it chaotically. TARS, the robot.
Best robot ever.
Best.
Is really unbelievably cool. And it's one of those... How come no one's ever thought about this? I'm sure there's probably some NASA designs exactly like that. The robot is effectively monolithic. It's a high degree of artificial intelligence. There's a lot that is played around within the film with its humor settings and its trust settings and its honesty settings. And they talk about this. The first humor setting is, what's the humor setting? You've got this. Can you set it at 90%? Sure. I'll tell you a joke while I blow you out of the airlock. The robot says
yes.
That.
Yes.
I mean, and instantly I fell in love with the robot as a character.
But at the same time, the robot... The monolithic design of the robot and the joke about blowing him out of the airlock gives you a deep sense of dread if you've ever watched a movie about robots going awry.
That was the moment I stopped worrying about the robot as a villain.
No, that was the moment that I realized, he's fucking with us. Nolan is fucking with us, the audience, based on our assumption of Hal.
Sure. First time you see the robot, it's the girl screaming in reaction to the light in her face because when they've reached NASA and Matthew McConaughey is being interrogated by the robot. And you think your brain doesn't realize it's a robot.
Yeah, you think it's a
terminal for someone else because
like
he talks
furniture.
Like a human.
And you think someone's talking through it.
Yeah. And then it kind of his dismissive attitude toward it. And then the way it rocks toward him.
Yeah.
The ungainly motion.
Charming from the beginning, but then also supremely functional. Robot as a R2-D2, basically, as a pilot for the ship.
Can
docking.
Do kind of anything.
And then
pilot,
And the spinning, the rolling.
The spinning, the way it, when it transforms.
That high, fast running with the spinning.
Oh, my goodness.
Was really lovely. And actually kind of upsetting.
Oh,
because it was so other. There's no biological thing that runs by rolling.
Which makes so much sense.
Yeah, it totally does.
So back to the beginning. The blight, I think the portrayal of Earth, the desolate future, I think it was beautiful.
I agree. I thought it was beautiful. I thought the actress that plays Matthew McConaughey's daughter was amazing.
She was so good.
Transcendent. I thought she was incredible.
Both actresses that played his daughter.
What's that?
Both actresses. Jessica Chastain was wonderful too.
Jessica
Chastain.
She plays
older daughter.
Is a genius.
Older daughter.
The cast of this movie is full stop incredible. it's the one time in years that I haven't loved Matthew McConaughey. I felt like, and I couldn't tell if that was from his dialogue, from the written dialogue, or the way he was delivering it. I love that guy. I really, he has not been able to do any wrong in the last few years. And I thought Dallas Buyers Club, which if you haven't seen, really, it is like one of the best movies I've seen in 5 years. Mm-hmm. No, and I know I'm given to hyperbole, but.
And True Detective was unbelievable. Yes.
So this movie suffers from, I think, True Detective being so good, and also Matthew McConaughey then after that doing the Lincoln commercials where he's always doing driving a truck and literally shots.
When my day we had the thing with the engineer.
I was driving Lincoln long before I was being paid to drive Lincoln just because I liked it.
Matthew McConaughey's driving for Uber?
And there are shots literally in this movie that parallel those Lincoln car commercials.
Well, it's him driving in a pickup truck.
Yeah.
I
think it's a dialogue. Because the moments that are most touching are when he doesn't talk, when he pulls the covers to see that his daughter isn't there.
When he's driving away from his daughter. I mean, there's a lot of the plot beats that are apparent in the trailer, and they're just as moving in the film as they would be in the trailer. And frankly, at the very end of the film, when he sees his daughter and, big spoiler alert, she's like 95 and he's still
120, I think.
Oh, 112. Yeah. Oh, and he's, yeah, right, yeah. Right. I found that insanely moving, just because I have kids, and that's the sort of thing that gets to me. But there were repeated, so the blight wasn't fully explained to my satisfaction about why, you know, now all of a sudden we're against technology and we're not doing anything except farming.
Well, okay, so they did explain that there was a famine that wiped out 5 billion people,
right,
at some point. And you presume that after that, some shit's going to change.
There are plenty of movies that I can point to where I totally suspend my disbelief and huge plot holes just to enjoy the film. So mm-hmm. there has to be another reason that I felt like I was kind of being steamrolled sometimes into the message of this movie, was love can conquer time.
Love literally transcends space and time.
Which I'm not sure is a bad thesis. Frankly, our sentience is the most mysterious thing of anything science could possibly study. I am a bunch of atoms. There are more non-human cells in me than human cells. And just like all of us, I am colonized by all sorts of different bacteria that affect my mood, etc. And I am sentient and I can think for myself. That's astonishing. So I don't think that love can transcend time is actually a terrible thesis to build a movie.
But the evidence that they use to support that, where at the end he has the revelation that, TARS, it's fifth dimensional beings. That's hyper evolved humans. And they can't find her because I can, because it's love. To the bookshelf. And it was gravity. And I'm going to use gravity to change the watch hands. None of that made sense.
Here's the thing.
With even the logic of its own movie.
Because then he's just doing through the same cycle. What are they looking to unlock with him?
You're thinking about this way too literally. Like, look, if we're falling back to the future rules here.
But they explain it literally.
What kind of time travel? They don't explain it literally.
They do. Because I was the one who used.
They totally do explain it literally. They go all the way back to, like, I sent the message to myself.
I sent the message to myself.
To go to NASA and be the only pilot. Like, also, by the way. He arrives at NASA and they're like, hi, we didn't know you were alive, but you were the best pilot please pilot our spaceship.
They didn't say he was the best. They said that he was the only one with any flight time that they had.
Actually, Michael Caine says you were the best pilot we ever
had. Okay, but that's dumb.
That part of the movie takes as long as I just took to say it.
There was a lot of bad exposition in this movie, too. Like, just to be clear, there was a lot of, well, we've got to go to the thing, and here's some gravity stuff, and blah, blah, blah. It's.
I think that they expounded too much on the stuff that didn't matter. When we're talking about the affecting parts of the trailer, him leaving his daughter, and you said it was just as affecting in the movie, it didn't give us more than we got in the trailer. It didn't give us...
No, and this is the
thing, watch the trailer, so I don't know.
I love Christopher Nolan. I'm a giant fan of his. And I would also say that I feel like in the Batman movies and in this one as well, he has a point to make and he's making it so sort of strongly that it overpowers the film to where I feel like I'm beaten over the head.
What was the point of Inception?
Well, Inception was just really enjoyable.
The point of Inception was to let go.
I enjoyed Inception immensely. Yeah. And
I liked Inception.
But I mean... this sort of, you know.
And you know what? This answer.
I would have rather a lot of this film be ambiguous and it would have been a lot more powerful.
And I was just about to say, the way he directs, because he
this is so ludicrous, right? Or do we direct large million-dollar movies? This is idiotic as an exercise. I agree with that, right? Yeah. I can imagine these filmmakers watching this and being like, "You fucking Sam,
I think he got 80% there, and I think a lot of it being the studio system being more palatable and the forces at work that we have no idea about happened. I think you can look at the Batman movies, where in the first Batman movie he did, Batman Begins, you know, people complained in many reviews that you couldn't make out the fight scenes. And you can tell he responded to that in A Dark Knight and A Dark Knight Rises by explicitly choreographing it in a way where you could make out the combat.
Yeah.
And when you talk about he has points in his movies, in The Dark Knight, I think everyone remembers the boat scene, you know, the theme being humanity is good and, you know, chaos cannot rule over the goodness of man. Way too heavy-handed, and we get the same thing.
And I also thought that the whole Harvey Dent line felt like overkill because the Joker is the center of that movie.
And where the only two movies he's done after the Batman movies, Inception and Interstellar. Interception, while I think much better movie than Interstellar, ended ambiguously, and I love that the spinning top at the end and wondering and making you look back at the movie. I think a lot of people didn't like that, and this movie has three extra endings. That it doesn't need.
No.
So here's the thing. Well, they set up a sequel too, which.
No, I don't think they set up a sequel. I think they wanted to give you closure.
They totally set up.
Yeah, I think they set up a sequel.
They can totally do a sequel.
The Anne Hathaway story.
They gave you a closure that you didn't need. They gave you closure of him being spat out.
Closure and then closure and then closure.
Yeah.
Well, it's like Return of the King.
And the closure was insufficient too, because you get him, not only does he survive, which is impossible, even given the rules of the movie, he's tossed out right and perfectly rescued. Whatever.
Once he's magicked through the black hole, anything's possible.
He's magic. He gets reunited with his daughter. You get this touching movement.
I was so ready for him to die too. That would be really intense and poignant. Yeah.
Yes, and I wanted, when he was in the black hole, I felt that there was a moment the movie could have salvaged himself, where I wish it was in his head. Like, he saves his daughter by sending the information out, but maybe it's in his head that he believes that then he connects the dots.
And then he can die in peace.
And it's not the fucking Ouija movie. It's a Ouija board. The movie's a Ouija board.
It is, again, I'll go back and say it's incredibly beautiful, and it's what a pleasure it must be to work with all those actors, right? I mean, they're all terrific. There is a little bit of the really the black guy is the disposable one who's going to disappear.
No, they killed the other guy first.
They killed the Hunger Games guy first.
Right. Yeah, that was.
I love that the other dude had to live on the ship for 23 years.
That was great.
Was so messed
up. And he was the one who was the most nervous.
He was a terrific actor. He was really great. I found myself wishing they had, and it had to have been a conscious choice because they didn't do a lot of old age makeup at all.
Mm-mm. No. Yeah.
I really wanted some. I wanted to see 23 years on his face.
Well, but he slept some, he said.
You still grow old.
Yeah. Well, no, not necessarily. No. He hyper-sleeped or whatever they called it here. My thought was, had they cut from Anne Hathaway flipping out about love through all of the Matt Damon business,
right,
and gotten to, hey, we have to go in the black hole because bad things happened or something, like that would have been a much more cohesive film. Conflict with Matt Damon was completely unnecessary.
It felt very unnecessary. The black hole stuff, remarkable.
It was gorgeous. But the rendering.
Not
just the black hole, the portal. Everything. The wormhole.
The tesseract.
Yeah, all of that stuff. All the space stuff. Every last bit of it. From the thing moving across Saturn to clouds that you can break off chunks of, to the planet's surfaces, to the black hole and the wormhole. All of that stuff worth going to this movie for. Totally.
In IMAX 70mm.
Totally. I mean, will not be disappointed. It is gorgeous. But I was craving the plot holes of Gravity.
So the other thing, the other thing that I thought is, I found the solution that Matthew McConaughey sent the answers back to himself in time and touched Anne Hathaway's hands much more satisfying than, well, you know, future space God, whatever.
Yeah.
Was like, that's much better than God made us do it.
That it's not them. Or it's not those super beings that we don't know about, as they refer to in Contact.
Right.
I prefer the Contact ending.
Oh, God.
Like the first moment they said ghosts in the first movie, I'm like, okay, it's going to be like a time loop thing. And then I'm like, okay, but time travel doesn't work that way. And then they kind of explain themselves
Norm
out
Chan,
of it.
Norm Chan, time travel expert.
Whatever.
They did not follow Star Trek IV rules.
And then when NASA said they, I was then, that they ex machina, having the they of contact, lets the movie then less focus about the they and focus more about the characters.
Right.
And that's what Contact was about. Contact was you have the magic aliens, and that.
Well, this was all about the characters.
Oh, that was the other one in this film. He goes to NASA, and they're like, "Look, there's a wormhole by Saturn." And I'm like, "Oh, that's really cool." And he goes, "Wormhole's not a naturally recurring phenomenon." And they're like, "Yeah, we know." And I'm like, "What? Wait, what? I didn't know that."
There's no wormholes. We don't even know that they're real.
Thing?
Yeah, it's a theoretical thing. It's like a naked singularity or something.
Right,
it's a thing that doesn't exist.
Okay, it doesn't exist. We've never found one, or it can't exist.
It's unclear.
It's unclear. It's not a naturally occurring phenomenon. Ergo, the only possible explanation is that somebody put it there.
Well,
it was one of the.
But it's a.
But that's one of those places I'm like, their explanation.
Adam,
the explanation for that was because they had sent the probes in and they had found that the wormhole led to. Idealized planets, which most likely that's not a random occurrence. But I did like that they had already sent the missions out.
Right.
That it wasn't like this wasn't the first mission.
Yeah, right.
That
right.
this was yeah, the last chance.
And the conceit of the 13 people that got sent to the 13 planets and were doomed, 12 of them.
Yeah.
I thought that was nice.
Yeah, I agree. I thought that was very, very cool. And I loved realizing that Anne Hathaway does still have the fertilized eggs.
Yeah.
So here's another hole.
Which is
the hole is if you have a crew of six or seven people, however many it ended up being, and you're sending out a whole shitload of fertilized eggs to presumably repopulate humanity, would you send a crew of four dudes and one woman, or would you send a crew of four women and one guy, or maybe five women?
You would send all women.
Yeah, you'd send all women.
Will's fantasies notwithstanding.
No. And it's totally true.
No.
There's a theory. Sci-fi actually has a new show coming out called Ascension, which is it's like their Mad Men Battlestar Galactica show. It's what if, and you know, that sounds crazy.
I was just thinking, I want to know what Don Draper and Adama would do in a room together.
Absolutely. It's what if in the 60s Earth thought it was doomed because of mutually assured destruction and then sent like a big ship of
that sounds good, actually.
Of just, you know, the survivors, the smartest people to repopulate and like a generation shot.
What if that really happened? What if we sent our best of the best of the best?
But it was all 60s. It was in the 60s. And
so, oh my God, this is a great idea.
And then, of course, because it's of those politics and the mentality of the people living back in the 60s, the kids they raise, it's still that kind of mindset.
Oh,
and you have all the conflicts of that. But people in the comments are like, it would make the most sense to send just all women.
All women.
All women.
Because, right.
And it sucks.
Come on in, guys.
It sucks for Anne Hathaway the most because she thinks she's the last woman alive.
Yeah, she's
She
bone.
Thinks she's basically Eve. And she has to not only fertilize herself and become the mother of the future.
Well, they
humanity.
Had a machine for that too, presumably. They said
maybe they had a machine for that.
Yeah.
But like she becomes Eve.
Tars, how you doing? By the way, I heard about another show that's going to be airing soon. A medieval musical.
Yes. Oh, it looks terrible.
Show.
Oh, my God.
I don't know. Apparently, I was talking to one of the actors and he said they had a lot of fun. It's called got the greatest name, Gallivant.
Wow.
I saw a trailer for it. It's one of those ABC TV
Rutger
specials.
Hauer. Yeah.
And it looks like so poorly budgeted. And it's a sing-along because they have the text.
Oh, no. Oh, wow.
As the music
really?
Comes out. Yeah.
Well, we'll do a spoiler cast
bouncing.
Of that when it comes out.
I liked this movie because it was about a guy and his daughter.
Yeah.
Like, at the end of the day, that's what the movie about.
It was about two guys and their two daughters.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Michael Caine and Anne Hathaway. Yeah. Those parallels are very important to the movie because the way they each choose to save their daughters was different. One was sending the daughter away and sacrificing himself, and one was sacrificing himself and sending his daughter, leaving his daughter on Earth.
Three different iterations of rage against the dying of the light.
Wasn't that also at the end of Batman Dark Knight Rises? Didn't he all didn't
okay, dark.
I just remember it from Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Oh, did Fisher Horn also read that?
Oh,
so I think it's worth seeing.
Here's the thing:
plot holes really, really annoyed me. The acting was, on the largest part, phenomenal, and it's visually gorgeous. But the plot holes drove me.
Do you know what you know what I do now when plot holes bother me?
What?
I think about what James Cameron told you at the end of the Titanic episode of MythBusters when you said, "Hey, you know, Jim." You could have put him. They could have been on the door, and everybody, Jack and Rose could have both survived.
And he reminded
me. And what did he say?
He said the script said the kid's going down. The kid's going down.
Right. Wow. At the end of the day, it's a movie.
They wrote the script. They could have written a better script.
And it's a lot better than the movie I haven't made. Let's put it that way.
Yes.
Let's leave it there.
Norm has thoughts.
There's still so much more to say. I feel like he could have won an Oscar this year. He gave it away.
Oh.
It was for him to lose. And this movie doesn't even deserve to be nominated.
Oh,
I think last year, Gravity was nominated for Best Picture. And Gravity, I mean, a lot of people were pushing for it to be recognized in some way. And it was no way it was going to win against, you know, the big heartstring-pulling dramas like 12 Years a Slave.
No.
And this year, if you look at the pantheon of movies that have come out this year, nothing, there's no contender. It's a really bleak year in terms of mass market movies that are both commercially successful and have emotional resonance. And I think this was the movie that people had their hopes on, and it was his to lose. And I don't think it's worthy.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well,
that's
we'll
all I have to say
soon.
About that.
Yeah, don't let science holes keep you from enjoying movies.
It's enjoying not
movies
because of plot.
I know. I'm not.
So have to read.
I have no problem with science.
Bad Astronomer wrote a ton of
couple
great
good posts.
Neil deGrasse Tyson has a lot of comments on it.
I'm going to read the Kip Thorne book, The Science of Interstellar.
I'm looking forward to
that. He said that he actually learned stuff from the visualizations of the black holes that he'd never even considered before.
And I love that. That's really exciting to me.
I thought it was the first time I've ever seen relativistic stuff approached in a mainstream film that was handled well and interestingly. Yeah. And like, I thought that the 23 years, the planet, the water planet was terrifying and amazing. And,
And next year, The Martian's going to be so weird.
Oh my God. It's going to be
so
Matt
weird.
Damon's going to kill all those Martians.
And Jessica Chastain's going to save everyone.
Is she in The Martian too?
She plays Lewis.
Oh, that's
she plays
brilliant.
Lewis
she plays the captain of the ship.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant.
Oh, wow.
She plays Lewis and Watney. It's going to be so weird seeing him play the exact opposite character.
Wow.
The desperate guy who is the best of man as opposed to being the false savior.
That's awesome.
All right.
Fucking Matt Damon.
That's
we'll see you guys next week.
Untitled.
Yeah. We'll see you on the next spoiler cast. Bye, guys.